Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Walden with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I want to thank all of you who just are regular listeners to the RSP Cast, which is rounding the corner to finishing up its first year in existence, and the feedback has been fantastic. I do want to take a little note and apologize to those of you in the last episode who listened to the last episode and heard near the end Mark Schofield and I talking over each other. There's a little bit of an issue with the Zencastr app occasionally where the recording has a bit of a delay, and I thought I edited everything, but I didn't. Apparently an hour and 2 minutes in, there were some issues there. So I apologize for that. I'll be a little bit more diligent next time. Today's RSP Cast is a solo effort, and we're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about, revealing the secret to the RSP. I've been doing the RSP since 2006. It's, you know, grown a great deal thanks to the readers and listeners that I have, the people who view the YouTube channel. You guys, I just love you guys for the feedback and the passion that you have for this product that I have. I'd go into it more, but I'd honestly probably get a little emotional about it. And I've got a podcast that I want to share with this, but know that it means a lot to me. I'm not trying to tell you that I'm the end all be all of scouting. I scout four positions. That's it, you know, but I try to do that as best as I can. And it was rooted in my past experience in operations management and quality management. I took a process that I learned that I had to get certified in and applied it towards football. And that process was designed to help me learn about what it is that I evaluate. And if I practiced what it was supposed to do diligently, then the process would grow in detail and help me find the knowledge that I needed to evaluate properly, which means persistence, dedication to really the craft of making a good evaluation. Not so much evaluating the player well, that's secondary. Actually creating a good evaluation process. And that comes down to what I think is the secret sauce of the RSP, which is the continual effort to define your evaluation criteria as best as you can. And I'm going to talk about this during this episode and kind of give you some examples. I've touched upon it a little bit in my blog, but if you haven't had an opportunity to read a little bit, I'm going to share that. I'm going to talk a little bit about some players and how that applies. But this came to mind, you know, this week for a number of reasons. One of the things that was interesting to me is today, Josh Norris of RotoWorld, guest on the RSP Cast and the RSP Film Rooms, he wrote down, he tweeted something that was a quote from Kyle Van Noy that said, "I was kind of told we don't know where to put you. And I'm like, why did you draft me? And I had my own coach telling me, I don't know where to put you." And this was in reference to Kyle Van Noy and the Detroit Lions. And Josh mused, "Well, I wonder how often this happens. Coaches and draft decision makers not seeing eye to eye." Now, what's funny about this is that 2 days earlier, I just wrote about this idea because I wanted you to imagine, for instance, I used a quarterback as an example, but Kyle Van Noy is a great example because a few years ago, maybe it was longer than that, when Kyle Van Noy was a senior at BYU, Ryan Riddle and I did a film room at the RSP Film Room on YouTube where we studied Van Noy's game, and Riddle being, you know, a record holding pass rusher for a Pac-10 team and a former pro, you know, very technically savvy player. He didn't do things the prescribed coach's way all the time. He was a very creative player as a pass rusher. And he played on the same team as Aaron Rodgers and Marshawn Lynch and DeSean Jackson. Ryan wanted to profile Kyle Van Noy, the outside linebacker for the Patriots now, because he loved Van Noy's creativity and the way that he saw the game. And Van Noy was kind of an outside. Was he an outside linebacker? Was he a defensive end? What we saw was that he was someone that was very creative in terms of understanding when and when not to take risks on the football field. Because when it comes to defense, oftentimes defensive play is understanding the balance of when to maintain your gap integrity and when to take a chance and risk maybe losing that to make a big play. Because if you don't try to make big plays at the right time, then it's kind of like the equivalent of just a quarterback making 5-yard checkdowns every play and or attempting them on every play, as opposed to going for the big play on occasion so that the defense has to react and prepare for that and account for it. And it makes the offense less predictable and makes you more productive overall. And it's the same thing with the defense. You can't just simply play, you know, it's kind of the dirty little secret. You hear a lot of coaches and X and O's guys talk about, well, they didn't maintain gap integrity, or they didn't understand or play to the scheme that they're supposed to be a part of. And it's about teamwork, teamwork, teamwork. And yes, that's true, but it's also true that you need playmakers who are willing sometimes to deviate from what's prescribed to make something happen. And that creates the turnover or the sack or the change in possession, and puts them in bad down and distance situations in ways that sometimes just plain every down gap responsibility won't do. It sounds great in theory, but offenses, just like defenses, are able to sit on certain routes and know that you're not going to go deep. Well, they're going to be able to reinforce being able to play short routes, you know, or short throws in a way that if you don't break past that and make them respect the deep ball, then your whole theory of getting 5 yards on every down, you know, with a check down isn't going to work out in the same way that a defender is not going to get, you know, it's not going to work out for the defense if they're simply just playing contain and not trying to go for the big play and being a little bit more creative at the right time and situation scenario. So Kyle Van Noy was a really fun watch for us. And, you know, it was interesting because he didn't start off with that great of a career. And now he is in New England, and you see the kinds of year and a half, 2 years that he's had. And, you know, now it looks like, well, the Lions look foolish. And of course the Lions have never been to the Super Bowl because, you know, they do this kind of thing. But it's not just the Lions, and it's not just the NFL. That's part of the kind of the secret sauce of the RSP, is that if you just look around and you've been out in the world a little bit and you understand organizational dynamics to any extent, you realize that communication can be a root issue. Same with, you know, involvement, how people involve team members and who they should involve in the decision-making process. Okay, let's think about it this way. I want you to imagine you're a head coach for an NFL team that needs a quarterback. And during those preliminary meetings with your organization's scouting director and general manager, say in December, the three of you have agreed that a quarterback with a strong vertical game is going to be a priority within the first 3 rounds for your team in April. Now, your involvement in the pre-draft process doesn't include preliminary scouting or board building whatsoever. The scouting director and general manager only want to bring you into the process after they've identified, say, up to five passers who fit that criteria. So they do that and they decide, here's the scouting reports. We're going to give you input now that we've figured out the guys that are on our list. And then we want to know who you like the most from that list. Sounds pretty cool, right? Sounds pretty fair. They've done some legwork for you. You've agreed on what that is, what that should be. And now they've given you the reports. So you review those scouting reports, and you're going to see things in the summaries of these scouting reports. And some of you who may not know the RSP cast very well or know my work very well, you know, I've had the opportunity to talk to scouts. I've had an opportunity to see NFL scouting reports. Okay. Now, what Dan Hatman and the Scouting Academy does, and, you know, with his, he strives to really reframe scouting reports in a way that are very specific and helpful. But that doesn't mean that's how it always is in the NFL, because a big portion of NFL scouting is really what happens off the field. They assume that everybody knows the on-field component to the point that sometimes it deteriorates in terms of there's low-hanging fruit to really help these reports be better. And also these reports, because they have some issues, can create issues that compound on themselves. For instance, you know, some of the summaries you might hear for, say, these five passers and their vertical talent would be something like possesses an accurate deep arm and an aggressive mindset to attack defenses vertically, or delivers the ball with a range of 50 yards up the sideline. So two very different things. So is displayed the arm strength to throw the fade to the opposite sideline 52 yards against, say, Wisconsin, or has the arm strength to deliver the post 40 yards on a rope. So each scouting report may just have this, each of one of these statements, not all of them, one of them. So, you know, one has, you know, they say they have an accurate deep arm and an aggressive mindset, but what's the range of the deep arm? We don't know. When someone says delivers the ball within range of 50 yards up the sideline, well, we know they have a range up the sideline, but what about to the middle of the field? What about to the opposite side of the field? What about under pressure? What about when they are on the move? You know, you don't know that. Doesn't say anything about that. This, you know, it's the same thing with displayed arm strength to throw the fade to the opposite sideline 52 yards against Wisconsin. Well, you know that, but again, what about the other qualities? So, you know, you review all this and you think, huh, you know, I'm not really getting all the information I need. I want to run an offense that's going to have certain characteristics, and defenses are going to play it a certain way, and I need a quarterback who can beat the way these defenses are going to try and defend us, that he can have the arm to be able to throw against cover two, or we don't need him to throw against cover two on this level, you know, on a certain level that we think we may need, you know, we're going to be able to get defenses into cover one enough that we know that they don't need to have a 50 yard, you know, range with their arm strength to throw the ball. Maybe they only need somewhere between 35 and 45. You know, those are things that are important. So being the diligent coach that you are, say you take these reports and you get the film on each of these guys that your scouts watched, and you set up a meeting with your offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach because you want their input, you know. And three players in, you and your staff figure out you're not going to be very happy about this list of quarterbacks that your GM and scouting director want, because you decide that according to your definition of what the deep ball is, none of these quarterbacks on this list can throw it. Now, how's that going to be? Because, you know, you may be listening to this and thinking, how can you say a general manager of the NFL and scouting director of the NFL, who are respected football men that you've never thought to question their acumen of their game? Why would you question that? They got their jobs for a reason. Well, yeah, they did. But is there an official training ground for scouts that's, you know, mandated by the NFL? No, there isn't. There's not at all. Many scouts don't even understand scheme to a level that you would see some guys on Twitter who are really into scheme, like Chris Brown or James Light or people from that coaching end, because that's a different skill set in many ways than actually studying the game or studying players. You know, I look at it this way. The people who study scheme, the X's and O's and all of that, many of them have a very mathematical, scientific, structural kind of bent, an engineer's kind of bent maybe, in terms of how they look at things, a very literal look at how things work. And that's great. It's valuable. It's important to know some of that. But the people who are really heavy duty into that, it doesn't make them good evaluators of talent, even though they have that knowledge. Because the talent's also about technique. And also when technique isn't as important, and it's about integrating a number of different things in the way that maybe it's important to, you know, how someone maybe analyzes literature or poetry or history. You know, there's a different type of critical thinking and knowledge base. And often it's a number of different knowledge bases combined and integrated into being able to see players and project and be able to look at them from an eye that's different than the literal X's and O's, but a more figurative look at certain things. And that's why I think that sometimes you see the analytical crowd get a little hung up on that and feel like, oh boy, that's, you know, that's not good and it's subjective. And yeah, well, there's, you know, again, there's a fundamental part about evaluating talent that requires you to look at it as a performance craft and not a science. The science is helpful and it's part of what you look at. It's just like you would study psychology if you were, you know, there's certain historical or psychological underpinnings to literature that you would look at that are based on science, that are based on past information that are facts and applied to the underpinnings of how maybe a writer uses that information to evoke a certain mood or a certain direction of a story and layer it with underpinnings that have significance. Well, you're looking at a number of different layers and underpinnings to get the significance out of players. And so I think what happens is that, you know, when you look at general managers and scouting directors, they often come from a certain subset of knowledge and they don't have, and we don't train scouts on the level that they could be trained. So I think what happens is that the problem is that when it comes to evaluating football talent, most people have it backwards. They're focused on how to spot players and give little thought about the structure of their evaluation process, even if they have a process. And the NFL has one. I mean, you see what's taught, which is this 1 through 9 grading system. I haven't even looked at it in a while, so I may not even be characterizing that correctly, but it's generally, I think it's a numerical grading system, 1 through 9, and each number represents, you know, it has a definition of a type of player that they are, you know, an all-pro player, a once-in-a-generation talent, you know, a franchise starter, a borderline starter, a, you know, top-tier contributor, a, you know, first-in-line reserve, you know, end-of-roster, you know, or street free agent, all those types of things. But what are the definitions for what those are? And how are they defined for each position? That's not in there. You know, those things are discussed. And, you know, you listen to people who are former scouts and they'll say, yeah, well, that's discussed. And we talk about that. And we have an agreement about what we're looking at. But it's still not enough, you know, because even if they have a process or even if they define certain things, what I'm commonly seeing is there's a lack of well-defined criteria shared by the scouts, front office, and coaches. And it's something that those three areas need to be working together. And then we need to even talk about the owners, because the owners, most importantly, you want them to avoid as much as possible coming down in the 11th hour of this process, after months, if not years, of looking at a player, and come down within the days or weeks or hours prior to making that decision and throwing out that process because of their emotional desire to have a player that's rooted in something other than the process that you've put in. One thought that that's crazy to happen. The Titans did it with Vince Young. Jimmy Haslam's done it with the Browns. There are other teams that have gone about that route. Matt Millen did it at times with the Lions, even though he wasn't an owner. But you get my point. The problem is that you have to define each characteristic, and it sounds like a pain in the ass to do. And it kind of is. I can tell you from experience. It takes a lot of time, but it's time well invested, because let's talk about this arm range. You know, scouts define arm range and accuracy. They're going to define it a certain way. And if they're not talking with the coaching staff about what the coaching staff expects, what the quarterback coach expects, what the head coach expects, the offensive coordinator expects, then there's risk that they're going to view it differently. And that creates variation in a process. So let's say in this example, the scouts saw completed passes of 35 to 40 yards from these quarterbacks on the list. And they were throwing against cover one or cover zero, one safety high or no safety. And, you know, I'm giving you some specifics about coverage and yardages that may not be realistic to a real scenario for quarterbacks, but I'm just giving you one as just an example, an easy example that could apply to any other position. But say they were completing passes 35, 40 yards downfield from the quarterback's throwing point against cover one and cover zero. And for those scouts, they were like, that's enough for them to put them on the big board as they can throw the deep ball. And let's say the general manager, you know, he goes along with the scouts. And then it's not discovered until much later in the process that the general manager was even doing it wrong, because no one talked about how to count what the yardage range was, where to count it, because you could count throwing range from the box score, and maybe the general manager looked at the box scores and said, all right, here's, you know, he had a 50-yard touchdown here, he had a 35-yard touchdown here, or he looked at, you know, the tape, but then went back and decided that how I should count this is from the spot at the line of scrimmage and not from where the quarterback threw the football. Well, you've got to define that, or else you and your scouts and your coaches aren't going to be on equal ground with what you're talking about when it comes to arm range and accuracy. So then there's the same thing about, say, tiers of accuracy or tiers of actually range. You know, what are you going to define a deep game? You know, that's another thing you would define. And this can apply to tackling, types of tackles, types of angles of pursuit, you know, how a running back makes decisions versus certain types of, you know, defensive schemes, or it can be how they run certain types of run schemes like zone or gap. You know, those things are important to define, embed these things into your definitions, because you need to be able to teach your people what you expect and get everybody have a process that holds them to being on the same page, so that when they deviate by accident or intentionally, you can spot that and correct it. And there's more to it than just that, but let's continue with this. Say, you know, looking at the long passing game again, you have two tiers, and say it's, you know, for me, this is how I do it. I have a vertical tier and a deep tier when it comes to passes beyond 28 yards. From 29 to 43 yards, I call that the vertical tier. For the deep tier, for me, that's 44 yards and above. Because frankly, there are offenses where we've seen success where quarterbacks can win, quote unquote, in the vertical game and force defenses to change their way of playing and their scheme of attack or defense because of the fact that they had success in 29 to 43 yards, even if they can't throw the ball past 44 yards with any semblance of consistent accuracy. So you've got to define these types of things, and you've got to figure out whether you want to define it and break it down more like I do, or you want to define it and, or you want to break it down and just say anything over a certain yardage range is deep, even if it means that it covers 2/3 of the field, you know, and some teams may decide that that's the case for them, and that's okay. But when I'm breaking down quarterbacks, regardless of scheme, regardless of defenses that they might face, regardless of surrounding talent, so I need to have more specifics, in my opinion, so that I can really differentiate how good the player's arm is, how accurate their deep game is, where that, and then help you see how that may fit. Because I understand my audience enough. I understand who I'm scouting for. I'm not scouting for a team. I might be scouting for several people who want to cross-reference their reports with mine, as well as fantasy players and fans who want to know about their player in a way that, you know, if I just applied, one tier, it might not be as successful to give them the information that they need. So what if they looked at these types of criteria and they had these two, vertical and deep, and none of the passers on this list of five that I mentioned met the criteria, even though this was the essential part of the offense that your coordinator wants to run because it fits the skills with the rest of your team. I mean, you and your staff have helped build a team, and you know that maybe you're in a window of contention, as odd as that may sound when you're looking for a rookie quarterback, but say you have the expectation that they're good enough quarterback prospects that if you can get this guy up to speed within a year or two, you should be contending with the surrounding talent you have, because you have a good offensive line. You have certain types of talent at receiver who can be very helpful, and it fits this type of game. But now your upper management has picked candidates for the draft who don't fit your offense, you know? And this is the type of scenario that we're looking at with even Kyle Van Noy. Even if the Lions were never weren't a consistent contender or even challenger for a divisional crown, you know, picking a Kyle Van Noy early when your coaches don't know what to do with them is symptomatic of this type of behavior that I just outlined. And it's going to lead, you know, it's important, you know, on one level to have different voices and ideas in the room. That's important. So if anybody was thinking, well, you know, putting everybody on the same page makes no sense because we need to have different voices, that's a cop out and reason for basically saying that we don't want to do the work to actually all be on the same page with what we're working with. Just because you have a defined set of things that you're looking for doesn't mean you're going to see things all the same way. You want to have them see certain things all the same way so that you can minimize the amount of discussion that needs to be had, or minimize the amount of misunderstandings of things that shouldn't be misunderstandings. If you can have a clear, common understanding of exactly what you're supposed to see, then you can start talking about things that kind of don't fit within that criteria. It's kind of like Patrick Mahomes. You know, when I studied Patrick Mahomes, I think the reason why I recognize Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback talent I've seen in the past 5 years, at least, and I think that that's panned out early on. I mean, I oftentimes like to wait 2 or 3 years, and maybe he has a down year, but I'm a believer that this guy's for real, and I think that, you know, seeing how he performed, I think few would argue that. The thing about Patrick Mahomes is that the criteria that I had, how I define it so specifically for each skill set, specifically for quarterbacks, allows me to see when things don't always fit the definition, or when things that people like to conflate with a certain area, you know, when they look at accuracy, for instance, and they look at mechanics and they say, well, he didn't fit, you know, his mechanics weren't good. And so then they start to, you know, talk about, because the mechanics aren't what they've seen in the past, and it doesn't fit that vaguely described idea of what mechanics are, and it could even be specific. They might have a very specific set of what mechanics are, but they haven't trained themselves to question or re-examine whether or not that definition really fits good quarterbacking. Because when you start having those definitions of what good footwork is and what a good follow-through is and what good throwing motion is, you start to realize it's not just one thing. And then you start to realize that maybe instead of defining the characteristics of Tom Brady as your mechanical model, that maybe you need to broaden what good mechanics are and understand that good mechanics have a range of behaviors, and that what you should be defining is something that accounts for that range of behaviors with a common overall goal, which is getting the job done, delivering repeatable, accurate passes at every range of the field. And when you start doing that, and that's something that is a product of working at defining and redefining, because you want to at the same time be specific enough about what the goal is that each of these tasks achieve, but you don't want to be so specific that you get lost in the weeds and you end up, you know, pigeonholing yourself into only wanting one type of player. And so when a Patrick Mahomes comes along and your scouting report is so bent, you know, or bent towards Tom Brady mechanics, then you're not going to get a chance. You're going to get hung up on that, and you're going to start to conflate the lack of Patrick Mahomes-like mechanics with a player who isn't going to be accurate, with a player who's going to be wild, with a player who's undisciplined, when in fact, that wasn't the case with Patrick Mahomes at all. And you're going to still hear people throughout this entire offseason and next year that he placed the ball in places where he shouldn't. And they're going to paint that with a broad brush rather than realize that Patrick Mahomes was much more careful than how that characterization was made. And so defining your criteria allows you to get better and better at giving yourself information that you can recognize players who in traditional scouting reports might not fit in the way that NFL and media types really think. You know, they look at them and go, wow, they get the results, but they're exceptional cases and it's not going to fly in the NFL. Well, the reason they said that, in my opinion, is because they didn't have clear definitions for what's successful. And as a result of that, they were too pigeonholed. And the only answer that they could give you was one that was, well, if he doesn't fit this, then it must be a problem, as opposed to he fits the basic philosophy of this. And the basic philosophy is that he's demonstrating repeatable, consistent accuracy in every range of the field. He's just not doing it in a very specific way that's akin to one type of player. And when you can start to see beyond that and see broader, but still hit the main points, suddenly your scouting reports and your evaluation and your eye is focused more on what should be important and not hung up on things because you didn't have a broad idea or understanding of what you're looking for. So to me, that's why defining performance criteria is so important, and it's something to me that if you do that and you promise yourself or make it the number one priority that when you come across plays or players or behaviors or styles of play or techniques that don't fit how you've defined them, that you take notes on that. And you start to try and work on figuring out solutions for that. Well, how do I encompass this? Because I realize that, for instance, that a specific type of footwork or specific type of throwing motion or a specific, you know, or throwing accurate passes doesn't mean that you have to knock a guy down for throwing across his body and with a throwing motion that's, you know, sidearmed. That you don't have to do that if he's consistently making the play and it projects to the NFL because he's doing it in windows that are very tight, but there's logical behaviors behind it. You know, if you're not seeing, if your definitions don't include that, then you need to start figuring out ways to make that happen. But at the same time that those definitions can filter out players who aren't at Patrick Mahomes' level of talent. Players who may have the ability to throw sidearm or throw across their body with velocity or throw off platform and not have traditional footwork. But that filter is, are they doing it with consistent accuracy at all ranges of the field? And what ranges of the field can they do it or can't they do it? And that's going to help you see how similar they are to a player like Patrick Mahomes who may break that mold, or what level can they do it and it be worthwhile, and what level can they not, or can they do it at all? They just happen to do all of these things separately, but they can't integrate it into the key result, which is, again, consistent accuracy. So that's the kind of thing that if you continue to focus on developing criteria, where you define things that well, this should be a continuous process for you. And again, it seems like a pain to do this. And it is kind of painful. I mean, after spending thousands of hours of watching film for a year and having a list of things that I write down that I'm eventually going to consider changing or weighing to change or evaluating through one filter and then also looking at it through another before I actually decide I'm going to make the change officially for my publication, I spend a lot of time doing that kind of stuff, but it helps me learn and it helps employers learn. And oftentimes you'll see this in industries where they want to get certification in certain ways or they're considering it, but the employees don't want to do it because, man, it's just extra work. You know, the managers don't want to do it. It's extra work. They got enough going on right now. But in order to get that clear basis for how to move forward, it can be one of the most helpful things, even though it takes a lot of extra time away from the current task. But you need to have somebody who's willing to support that, you know, from the top down. You can't just have a regional manager or a GM support it if the owner doesn't support it. You need the owner and the GM both to be on board with it and really make it a priority and understand that sometimes the current priorities at hand may not have as much urgency short term if you're focusing on this long term thing. And it takes some strength of leadership to be able to do that. So, you know, when I look at this particular subject matter of guys like Kyle Van Noy or Patrick Mahomes, or any player that we're going to start to see in this draft class, you know, whether it's Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins or Daniel Jones or Brett Rippon, you have to understand that when we start to see players who seem like busts or disappointments, sometimes it's that they just didn't fit within the system because these teams don't go to the extent of getting on the same page and involving the right people into this process. Because to me, how do you not involve coaches into evaluation and really build something lasting? You know, you're going to hear a lot of things about salary cap and the realities of coaches and their tenures and the tenures of GMs and the tenures of players and how contracts and free agency has changed this to a certain extent, blah-de-dee-blah-de-dee-blah-de-dee-blue about, you know, why you can't build things with a firm foundation and a longer term approach. But I would say that to that, a lot of that still is a cop-out. Because if you're actually an owner who cares about building a team, how can you not look, especially for the long term, how can you as an owner not look at something like this? How can you look at something like this and say, well, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not worthwhile because you're just basically saying no to your team being able to work at top efficiency. If your team decides to undergo coaching changes, then you need to make sure that your scouting process changes along with it, along with the philosophies that you have. If your player talents change and they do certain things well, say you get a new quarterback and he's very good, but your coach has had to make some adjustments for that new quarterback who replaced the injured starter and started and played beyond expectation and is now a Pro Bowl player, but they have certain strengths and weaknesses that are different, slightly different than your former starter. Well, what receivers work best with that? Who are the tight ends that work best with that? Who are your linemen that are going to block best for that? You know, maybe one quarterback, your former quarterback, was really good at moving to his left, and the other one is really good at moving to his right. And predominantly, you want to be able to have a certain type of blocking set up on one side that you know, you don't have to worry about as much so that quarterback, when he is pressured, can do a little bit more working to the side that he's good at. You know, I mean, I'm talking about that specific. There may be situations like that that come up where you're looking at players to add as pieces that will help complement what your quarterback does well. And that will change as players change. But what shouldn't change is the process you go about figuring that out with, whether you have new coaches, new GMs, new players. If you're the owner, the one thing I do see in the NFL that's constant is they're the same owners. And the same owners, I would think, would want to embrace a process that even they could understand, you know, that they could get into and follow as a guideline. And when you follow a guideline like this, even when you have questions about what the guidelines should be, and you're going to need to focus on continuing to refine it and change it, it helps you block out all the BS that's around you. And ownership needs to do that because they deal with a lot of BS and they listen to a lot of BS. And part of that too is maybe they don't want to listen to all this stuff. And the answer probably is that they don't. You know, they feel like they're captains of their industry. They know a lot. They probably feel like that they're godly on some level when it comes to how, because of their ownership of team. And that allows them to make decisions in ways that they would probably, if they were actually managing these people day to day, if those people made decisions with the process that these owners did, these owners would probably fire themselves. So, you know, it's a, if we get a chance to see some, when you get to see the rare teams that are really aligned on this level, who pick players who really fit what the team's trying to do, I would bet you that these teams at least go to a certain extent of understanding how to define the criteria of what they use to evaluate each position. And if it's not, if they don't do it across the board with every position, they might be good at certain positions because maybe they rely on a specific coach or position coach to drive some of that and help with the scouts. You know, that, or there was at least a former coach that was there that helped implement that, and it was still followed because it was successful. Just some food for thought with this. When you start looking at draft season and you start looking at maybe 6 to 8 to 12 to 18 months down the line and go, this player looked like it was a good idea to pick him, but now he doesn't quite fit what they do. And he's not very good. He doesn't look very good right now. He's not playing very well. Or, and then maybe 24 to 36 months later, he's now playing for another team and looking great like Kyle Van Noy. Or he wasn't rated very as highly and he was seen in a certain light. And people are saying, well, he's the exception to the rule. And this just shows you how little scouts know about one thing or the other, Patrick Mahomes. Well, maybe it's just because, again, it's about defining what you're looking for. And when you define what you're looking for, you can pinpoint it without letting certain noise get in the way and creating noise that is, that shouldn't be there. So those are my thoughts, and it's kind of the secret sauce to the RSP. And I'm still, you know, listen, I'm still struggling with certain ways to define things. I'm doing some new ways of charting quarterback accuracy, and I'm finding that there are mitigating factors for how I grade whether someone's pinpoint accurate or just accurate enough for a receiver to go up and expect them to win the ball, even though they had to do more work than they did as a pinpoint accurate on a pinpoint accurate throw. Sometimes there are throws where they have to do the work of a generally accurate throw, but you would grade it as pinpoint because the way the coverage is placed, that's the only way the receiver is going to be able to catch that football. But it's a throw that would be considered open that the quarterback should make, should be the optimal throw. For example, say a throw over a safety on a skinny post or a dig route that's the route that needs to be thrown to in a down and distance situation, but it requires a high throw that the receiver is going to have to go up and extend to win it. That requires more work than what a pinpoint target would look like if there wasn't a safety or linebacker in front of that target. So, I mean, these are little weed-like details that I have to look into to try and clarify definitions of criteria with scouting that will help me get a clear view of these players. And those are the things I'm most working on, you know, year long. And sometimes I sit 2-3 years with this information before I make any changes so that I can have some time to observe. So that's a little bit of a secret to the sauce with the RSP. I hope that, you know, those of you who are really into scouting and wanting to evaluate players found this worthwhile. I would love your feedback. I know some of you are like, you know, don't really care. You wanted to hear about, you know, some other players. And we're going to be doing that down the line here in future RSP publications, I promise you that. But this is something that's interesting to me. I know that many of you have expressed interest of similar things. So I try to go with my gut sometimes to focus on topics that are a little different than the norm with this, because I'm not looking to be, you know, the typical soap opera draft analyst kind of, you know, big media thing that goes towards, you know, the easy topics. And there's good in that. I'm not making fun of them. I'm not being critical of them. It's just the truth. That's what they have to do. You guys have afforded me the opportunity to explore more creative or thoughtful ideas to, you know, for this podcast, as well as for my site. And I want to thank you all for that again. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. If you've got feedback, you can certainly do the same, or you can email me as well if you want to go into more detail at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. You can also check out the RSP Film Room and Boiler Room shows on YouTube on my channel, Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room. This podcast is available on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Blueberry, and Stitcher. And you can also check out my site, of course, mattwaldmanrsp.com. You can buy the RSP directly at mattwaldman.com. And there's, you know, videos on the YouTube channel as well as on my site that give you a tour of the RSP and RSP post draft. Remember that when you do buy the RSP, which is available for download in April, you're going to get a login and password if you pre-order now. When you do get the download, when you do become a subscriber, you also get subscribed to a monthly newsletter that runs June through December that will include rankings updates and previews of players for the upcoming class. So I hope you check out the RSP if this is new to you. The publication is by far the best thing that I do when it comes to this career track that I have taken on. So if you like the other work, then I promise you you'll love the publication, because it's really what all this work is about, is putting it in as research for the publication. And, you know, again, 10% goes to Darkness to Light, great organization, d2l.org. You can find out more about them and the great work that they do to prevent and address child sexual abuse. So I hope you guys have a good week. I know the combine's coming up. I've got a good RSP film room coming up with Fergus Conley, who is the writer of Game Changer. I've sent him about 15 minutes of tape with a variety of different draft prospects, and I'm going to have him break down a certain number of them that he found interesting based on how they move and what that means in terms of maybe their potential health or development. He's a really interesting and experienced mind in sport all over the world. Worked with the University of Michigan under Harbaugh, as well as with San Francisco. And I think his insights are going to be fascinating and educational. Guys, have a good week.